The marshal may proceed.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Smith, the Honorable Carol A. Hooten presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The last matter on our oral calendar this morning is the state of Minnesota versus Jeffrey Mark Kuczynski, and the file number is A210584. Counsel, this matter is being recorded, and I would ask that before you begin your oral arguments, you introduce yourself and your client. You will each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. With that being said, we will now proceed with the appellant. You may begin, Mr. Whitlock.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Joel Whitlock, appellant for the state. Your Honors, the state or appellant is here asking for a reversal of the district court's decision as it relates to lack of jurisdiction or loss of jurisdiction. The appellant believes that the Court of Appeals could do this under a couple different methods. There is a blending of a couple of these methods. I think tolling.
Can I ask you this? Because there's no dispute, right, that there was not a motion brought before this court to extend the timelines for good cause. Am I correct on that?
You're correct, Your Honor. There was never a hearing or motion to have a hearing for a good cause hearing. That's not in dispute.
And do you agree that the timelines did run? I think the date was April 15th, I think, the court did lose jurisdiction.
I believe on April 12th would have been the deadline absent any tolling.
Okay.
And Your Honor, the appellant is here asking that tolling be determined, or that the district court incorrectly determined that the time had not tolled. Additionally, time may have been waived. And the appellant believes that it's a little bit different. Tolling is as it relates to time being within the time frame, and waiver as occurs outside of that 180 days.
And do we agree on the law? The law is that in order for there to be an extension of the timelines, that motion has to be brought and heard within the statute. Period of time.
The second part of your question as it relates to within 180 days, I believe, is accurate, but I don't know if the first part of the question I might be in disagreement with, because as it relates to the writ of mandamus in my brief, you can see that there's clearly a statutory duty of the court to either have reached to final disposition, have the matter set on for final disposition to be had, or to have that good cause hearing.
So can I interrupt? Let's divide our issues, because I think it'll clarify them. I think we're starting right now with the good cause question, what Judge Hooten was asking about. So let's assume, take tolling off the table in a case. We're dealing with a hypothetical case where we just go to day 180. Are you suggesting that a district court, if it gets to day 181, and it has not, there's been no trial, that the district court needs to sua sponte schedule and hold a hearing on whether it should extend the 180-day deadline for good cause?
I don't think this court can even do that at 181 days. In this case, I think the first appropriate time for that good cause hearing to have been held was March 31st, 2021, which without any tolling would have been about 168 days in. Clearly,
so you're saying, so when is a district court obligated sua sponte to determine, in your view, whether good cause exists to extend a deadline? You're saying it has to be before 180 days. When does it have to do that, sua sponte?
Your Honor, if we look at Wilson, it happened there when they determined that the trial setting, even though it was within 180 days, was not appropriately set because the amount of discovery would have prohibited Wilson from having the opportunity to review that in an appropriate manner. And the court's
problem. And Wilson, though, the district court had dismissed it before the 180 days.
Correct.
And the problem was not considering, I'm just wondering, in your average case, if it's getting up to 180 days and the court's about to lose jurisdiction, you seem to be suggesting that the district court has some obligation to think, oh, I wonder at 180 days if this should be dismissed or should I, for good cause. I don't see anything that says that the court has to consider good cause before dismissing at 100 at day 181.
The statutory duty is to have a final disposition or have a good cause hearing. That's a statutory duty of the court. So in this case, March 31st, 2021, we're without tolling, we're 168 days in on a 180-day time frame at a Rule 8 hearing. Clearly, we're not going to get to trial before 180 days. But at that hearing, the omnibus was set 3 days past the deadline, again, assuming no tolling. At that time, that constitutes a waiver. Had that not been a waiver, had the respondent indicated, no, Your Honor, we're not agreeable to that, that's outside the time frame, that would have prompted a good cause hearing. But it didn't happen because there was a waiver.
Well, if you're claiming waiver, isn't a waiver something that has to be done with knowingly, that it's a known right you're giving up?
No, Your Honor.
And there's no evidence that this was known to the defense attorney at the time that this omnibus hearing was set. How could that be considered to be a waiver?
The case law seems to indicate it doesn't have to be an explicit waiver. An implicit waiver is sufficient.
But the only evidence in this record is that the attorney had no idea at the time that was said that the 180 days would expire.
That's what he's indicating. And so if he sits silent and allows.
How can that be a waiver? If it's not a right he was aware he had. And it was just set by the court.
Your Honor, if we're 168 days into an 180-day time frame, the defendant himself that's his demand. If it's important enough for him to make that demand, it needs to be more than just the filing of it. Counsel indicated he didn't know after the fact. And I certainly think the court should take him at his word, but that does that mean that they can slide in? It's
well,
set
I
on.
I mean, whose responsibility is it to honor the 180? I mean, his response to the state's arguments is that the state at any given time could have said, I want to bring a motion for good cause here.
So
and raise the issue, but the state never raised it, right?
At the first three hearings, it would not have been appropriate to have a good cause hearing. The defendant himself wasn't even there.
Right.
At the March 18th first appearance, the defendant showed up, had public defender appointed. I don't know that it would have been appropriate to have that good cause hearing in an open court at that point in time. And then the very next hearing constitutes a waiver. And again, the state is under the impression that there is a tolling. It would have been about 132 days at that first appearance that have already been told based upon non-appearance. So even the state wasn't in a position to think that we're bumping up on the time frame where a good cause hearing would be appropriate at that time.
Well, go ahead. Except the state, I mean, the judge found, as you know, that there wasn't sufficient evidence to show that the non-appearance by the defendant was anything within his control. Therefore, it shouldn't be considered tolling because there was a lockdown because of COVID.
And that's one of the reasons that we're here, Your Honor, is I do believe think there is tolling. Defendant, the case law is pretty specific that failing to appear does count towards the defendant. If the defendant is in the infirmary and unable to attend, is it not something that is should be held against the state? I don't believe so. I cannot proceed without defendant's appearance. And what makes this quite unique is this is a detainer. So it means somebody's in custody. And normally they would be brought to the courtroom in this particular case in Isani County. We would have them in the jail, brought up to the courtroom. There would be a discussion as to why he's refusing to show or such a matter. That was not allowed Under the circumstances of the COVID and the protocols in place, this was a Zoom hearing. There's nothing more that the state could do to get St. Cloud's, the prisoners in St. Cloud, to cooperate with the hearing. And it happened three times. I don't know if the district court judge found that it was no fault of the defendant. I think the district court found that they didn't know because there was not enough evidence. The only information that was really included was one of the appearances was due to a lockdown. No indication as to who even caused that lockdown. Maybe it was related to COVID. That's what seems to be the impression. But somehow that's determined to be the fault of the state and held against the state when the state clearly can't proceed any further.
But couldn't the state have made given notice and made a motion to extend the period of time at any time within the 180 days?
Certainly could have, Your Honor. But if 132 days had told before the first appearance, why would that even be appropriate at the time? It would be premature.
Well, it would be tolling if it was the fault of the defendant, but there's no indication in the record that that was the fault of the defendant. So doesn't the state have the obligation to make sure that the matter is heard or that there's good cause shown before the 180 days expires?
I think if we go back to Wilson, you can see that in Wilson, the first part of the holdings indicate the writ of mandamus is available because the statutory duty wasn't followed as it relates to the premature dismissal. And then it continues on to talk about even in the absence of a premature dismissal, a good cause hearing needed to be held. And it is with the obligation of the court. That's the statutory duty of the court.
Okay, but if let's say the state or the court is at fault in not holding the hearing, does that mean that the defendant has somehow waived his right? I mean, it's the court's responsibility, but if that doesn't happen, the court still loses jurisdiction, correct?
It does lose jurisdiction, and that's one of the requests of the appellant is to reinstate that through writ of mandamus and have that good cause hearing.
But how can you do that after the 180 days?
Just like they did in Wilson.
Okay.
In Wilson, it was premature as it relates to 180 days, but the holding indicates it's still available. As nobody here is arguing that a good cause hearing happened. And in fact, if it was sent back for a good cause hearing, the court could say the delays based upon failures to appear are the state's fault, not the defendant's, and find a lack of good cause, and then it would be done. But that good cause hearing was never held. That's clear.
Right. And I think when I look at Wilson, I mean, again, dividing this up. Okay. So we've looked at tolling. We have an argument about, I mean, so what happens is the clock is stopped or not for tolling. And what we're talking about is the standard for when you stop the clock during tolling. And that's usually, I think, when it's at the defendant's created the delay in the case. And here, in terms of the first appearances, you know, it's hard for me to see right now that the defendant is responsible for not appearing. Then you get to the question of whether the omnibus, the fact that he didn't waive an omnibus is a created delay by him. That doesn't seem to be the case under Kurtz, where the delay was, where the defendant was found responsible for a contested, from the date of a contested omnibus, but not from the default omnibus.
Certainly,
and then you get to the question of, I just want to go to Wilson. Then you get to the question of the good cause thing, which I think would then evaluate whether the state had good cause to continue because COVID, because whatever.
Right.
And what Wilson says, the court says, we conclude that a writ of mandamus is available to vacate a district court order that dismisses a complaint for violation of then the 6-month period before expiration of the 6-month period. There was no absent tolling, there was no dismissal of this case prior to the expiration of the deadline, right?
Your Honor, that's specific to Wilson, but the decision says it's allowed even under the circumstances in this case.
That it's allowed to demand that a court consider it. Okay.
Yes.
Can we speak to that?
So it goes further than the facts is specific in Wilson, and it's very clear that it would fit this scenario where 180 days was passed, no final disposition, and no good cause hearing. That good cause hearing was required to be held. Respondent wants it to believe that it's the state's obligation to make sure that was held. I have limited ability to do that. Certainly there was not a motion. And again, under the impression that the 132 days of 155 days at that first appearance had already been told. And why wouldn't it have been? There's been a failure to appear three times.
Well, because it might have been a misimpression by the state then, because I think unless it's the delay is attributable, created by the defendant,
and
it doesn't toll it.
And I don't think we really know at this point in time. There's not enough information. And I think that's what the district court decided. They couldn't determine that it was attributable. So that's why the district court did not toll it.
Well, so it may not, if it was unknown, maybe the state shouldn't have considered it tolled during that time, I guess.
Generally speaking, failures to appear in a typical case of a speedy demand would go against the defendant. That's very typical. So mm-hmm. perhaps. But at the end of the day, that good cause hearing was not held, and it needs to be held again.
Well, except who has the burden of making sure that good cause hearing is held? I mean, we are going to put it on the defendant in these cases,
no.
are we? Because they don't. I mean, it's not their responsibility to make sure no. you comply with the statute.
And Your Honor, the state's not asking that. The state's indicating that it's very clear. It's the statutory duty of the court. Before 180 days expired to have that good cause hearing. The appropriate time frame would have been March 31st, 2021 at that Rule 8 hearing. But that at that time, the next hearing of being the omnibus was outside the time, absent any tolling, and that was agreed to.
So
had
you're
it not
saying
been
that
agreed
this,
to, that would have prompted a good cause hearing.
So
because
you're saying
that would
this,
have been the only recourse.
Well, you're saying the state has no responsibility, it's all the court? The court has the duty. I mean, this isn't a case where the court dismissed it early. This is a case where they lost jurisdiction.
And I don't want the Your Honor to be limited by Wilson and the facts of the Wilson, because the holding indicates it's still available. Writ of mandamus is still available to compel the district court to have that good cause hearing. It couldn't have it on the 183rd day, because it lost jurisdiction, but it can regain jurisdiction through writ of mandamus. That's what the holding is in Wilson. It goes beyond the premature dismissal. And again, it would have happened on March 31st had there not been an acquiescence or a waiver to that April 15th date, because that would have been the only thing that could happen. Your Honor, we're bumping up on the 180 days according to our time frame, our running, our math as it relates to the clock. We don't agree to this April 15th date. April 12th is the deadline, prompting the court to have that good cause hearing.
Well, in looking at the record, it doesn't appear that either party was aware that the 180 days was going to expire.
And counsel at the time indicated he just got the matter and was unaware until after the fact.
Well, and the state must not have been aware either. The state didn't follow up on it either, right?
Your Honor, I pointed out at every hearing that there was a failure to appear that this was a detainer and that the clock was ticking or could be ticking. And that wasn't taken very seriously. You see, the October 13th date was 23 days. It was the date that was received 23 days later. The first appearance was scheduled at that hearing with a failure to appear. I pointed out this is a detainer issue. Then we have a January 13th and then a February 3rd. We're having extended time frames for these schedulings of the matter. There is no reason for the state to think that this is not a tolling.
There was no court determination of tolling at any time, right?
There was no asking for that to be determined, no.
Okay. And the court didn't say it's tolled.
No, there was no indication at that time by the court that it was tolled, but the behavior would seem to indicate. When I'm pointing out the fact that this is a detainer request and that they're setting things on for 45 days or more later instead of the following week. Despite the fact that the very first appearance was 23 days after the detainer was filed.
Okay. So, well, I think your time has expired, so you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Metzger.
Good morning. May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Drake Metzger. I represent the respondent in this matter, Mr. Jeffrey Kuczynski. We would be requesting that the court affirm the district court order that dismiss this case under the Uniform Mandatory Disposition of Detainers Act, because ultimately the court did lose jurisdiction and it no longer had jurisdiction of the case. And there was nothing that the defendant, respondent did that told that 6-month deadline under the UMDDA. Now, the UMDDA does require that after a detainer demand has been filed, there's a 6-month deadline to bring any matter to trial or extend that after a finding of good cause. But that finding of good cause must occur within that 6 months.
Well, whose duty is it to make that finding a good cause and or bring the issue before the court?
Well, I believe that's the state's duty to request that. I think the court could certainly schedule a hearing, but I think getting to what the state is arguing here, that there's a statutory duty to do so, I strongly disagree with that. I think in discussing the Wilson case, that is a very unique situation where there was a dismissal under the Uniform Detainer Act prior to the 6-month deadline. I think there was about 6 weeks left before the end of the deadline. And when that was dismissed, the state actually requested a hearing for a continuance to continue that deadline. The state proactively tried to extend the deadline. And in that very specific situation, I think the court found that if it wasn't going to be scheduled for trial prior to dismissing it, the court did have a duty to at least make a determination as to whether good cause existed. That's not the situation here. Here, the record reflects that on the date of the omnibus hearing, which was 2 or 3 days past the deadline, defense counsel, who's me in this situation, actually, I had just received notice or the actual confirmation of the certified mail receipts indicating the date that both the state and the court received the detainer agreement. And there's no dispute that that was October 3rd. There's no dispute that the 6-month deadline from that date was April 12th. So for the first time at the omnibus hearing, I discovered that there was we were past the deadline. And at that point, I think the statute, the plain wording of the statute is very clear that no trial, no good cause found means that there's no jurisdiction and the case must be dismissed with prejudice. So on its face, on the face of the statute, I think this is very clear that the court did not have jurisdiction and the court appropriately dismissed the case. The state argues that that Mr. Kuczynski contributed to the delay, therefore tolling the deadline. And I would agree that the law does allow for tolling if the delay is attributable to the respondent in the situation.
Well, is that tolling, does that arise as a matter of law without any kind of judicial consideration of the tolling? Does that occur pursuant, I mean, is that something that can be raised pursuant to a motion to extend the deadline?
Well, I think that's something where, quite frankly, I don't know that that's a determination that would be made in real time. I think that's more of a determination that would be in situations like this following a dismissal. And when, then we're forced to see whether or not the respondent did anything to toll that deadline. So I don't think
that... that can be done after the expiration of the 180 days?
Well, I think
that was tolling or not. Is that because I mean, you know, does the court lose jurisdiction or does it not after 180 days? Or can the court, after the 180 days, determine the issue whether there's been tolling or not?
Well, admittedly, I guess my position would be that I've only seen this come up in Court of Appeals, where we're looking at a situation where a case has been dismissed and it's determined that there was tolling. I guess I don't, I would agree that this court could look at it and find that it was tolled, but I don't think that there's a proactive or a necessity that the trial court make a finding that there was tolling or not. I think I would agree that the court loses jurisdiction at 180 days. And I think case law supports that if there was tolling, that deadline is extended to the extent that it was told by the respondent.
Right. Because I think counsel is what happens is, as I said, you haven't reached the 180 days. if it's been tolled, right?
Correct.
So tolling just stops it, and then 180 days comes later. So the issue of whether it was tolled or not gets determined by presumably by the district court at dismissal if it's contested, you know, right? That oh no, we're only on day 60, 160 because it was tolling. But otherwise, it's not like it gets determined, I presume, along the way, like, oh, we're stopping it. Now it's restarting. Now we're stopping. Now we're restarting. It comes up at the end.
I would agree. And in this situation, the district court, I don't believe, made a finding that it was told, and specifically found that under the totality of the circumstances, all of the delays that it felt contributed to the delay, the district court thought contributed to the delay, were not attributable to the respondent. And I think that is in the order. So I think to the extent that that issue was raised, I do think the district court made a finding that it was not told. And I think inherent in the dismissal and finding of lack of jurisdiction, found that deadline was not told by respondent.
But doesn't this provide some difficulty for the state? Because if the state here assumed it was told and proceeded on the basis that it was told. And now, you know, after the fact, they're told, no, there wasn't a tolling. It certainly creates a lot of uncertainty.
I disagree. I don't think it creates uncertainty. And I would argue respectfully in this situation, there's no evidence in the record that the state made any assumption or any assertion to the court that it was under the assumption that this was being told, or that it had even raised the deadline at any point. Nothing in the record here indicates that. And the district court order specifically made a finding that there was a November 5th first appearance. There's no explanation as to why there was a non-appearance there. There's no other discussion as to what else occurred at that first appearance. It's continued to January 13th. There is indication that due to a pandemic-related lockdown at the prison wasn't able to produce Mr. Kuczynski for that date. It's continued again to February. There's no indication in the record as to why that date was moved from February to March. So now, at the very first time Mr. Kuczynski actually appears in person, or excuse me, over Zoom, for the first appearance, where I believe it's March 18th. At that point, we have a PD is appointed. There is nothing in the record that, or there's no transcript from that hearing. There's nothing in the record that indicates that any of these deadlines were discussed with either the court, the state, or Mr. Kuczynski. And so, I don't think there's any evidence in the record to support the notion that the state was continuously raising this issue, and there was a basis to be under the assumption that it was even being told, or that there was any discussion of tolling or the deadline to begin with. And I also would point, there's essentially, in my opinion, the root of the issue here is whether or not just mere acquiescence is a delay attributable to the defendant. And I think that's what the state is more or less arguing. And if you look at case law outside of the state, I don't think there's any Minnesota case on point where the delay caused by the defendant is only just scheduling the next court date.
Well, but can I ask you, I'm a little confused here, because if in fact you're saying that notwithstanding the fact that by, you know, the 180 days has passed, that there can be a retroactive determination of tolling. All right. And that's what you're saying, correct?
I think this court could find that there was tolling, but I don't think that there's a basis for that.
But the court can say there's tolling or not tolling. Am I correct?
Correct. I would agree with that. Why couldn't
the court at the same time, if the court's able to do that outside the 180 days, why couldn't the court at the same time determine whether there was good cause to extend as well?
Well, because that's a different issue, because that... when the deadline occurs at the 180 days, the court can say, oh, you know, there was tolling, so the deadline hasn't actually passed. Right. But according to the plain wording of the statute, if that deadline passes and there's no tolling, and there's nothing that extended that deadline, there's no jurisdiction. So on the one hand, if there was tolling, I think the trial court could say, we're still okay, we haven't met the deadline yet. But if we've passed the deadline, they can't retroactively go back and say, oh, wait, no, there was good cause to extend it. And I think that's so I think that's the plain wording of the statute. And I think that would support. And again, I think the district court correctly did that here, because I don't think there was any basis for tolling. But even so, I mean, getting to just merely scheduling the omnibus hearing, you know, this one of the state's arguments is that Mr. Kuczynski didn't waive it. His omnibus rights at the Rule 8 hearing. First of all, I'd point out that at the first appearance, again, nothing in the record that Mr. Kuczynski demanded that Rule 8 hearing, just that one was scheduled. And it was also scheduled on a speedy time basis to occur within 2 weeks. But then at the Rule 8 hearing, when I first appeared with Mr. Kuczynski, the record reflects that I hadn't even received discovery at that point and didn't until 2 days before the omnibus hearing, which was already after the deadline. Had passed. And so to say that he should have waived his omnibus hearing at the Rule 8, I think is disingenuous, because it's essentially saying he should just waive all his rights away just to get a trial to meet, you know, the speedy time frame under the UMDDA.
Counsel, I didn't see, so the sort of the automatically or the default omnibus or the automatically scheduled omnibus. I just want to confirm, I didn't see anything in the record where there was a motion by the defendant for a contested omnibus, or we don't have the transcripts of the Rule 8 appearance. So I don't know, so we can't see anything in the record about that. So what we have is a record that does not tell us what the omnibus, what issues were going to be raised. Is that right?
That's correct. And you know, I think what the record would reflect that it was a procedural omnibus setting following the procedural Rule 8 hearing. There was no discussion of any motions to be raised. And I think from a pragmatic matter, that would have been a potential omnibus waiver date. But I think that was just a procedural hearing setting. Looking at some of the other state's arguments as well. I would note that the state does continually argue that failing to appear is a basis to toll the statute. And I think a lot of the cases, if not all the cases that the state cited, are just traditional speedy trial demands, reviewing under the Barker factors. And the Supreme Court of Minnesota recently in the State v. Mickle, I think the case site is 960 Northwest 2nd, 230. That was a case that was just published very recently, I think in the end of May of this year. But the Supreme Court specifically stated that it was an error for the Court of Appeals in that case to consider the Barker factors when reviewing whether or not there was a UMDDA violation, because this legislature very clearly intended that it would be a heightened standard and not just the bare minimum constitutional standard. So I think it would be inappropriate to analyze whether or not there was delays or look at whether or not there was a violation using the Barker factors. And so I think the state's reliance on those is inappropriate. But further, I just don't think there's any evidence in the record to support that Mr. Kuczynski had anything to do with the failures to appear at those number of first appearances. Additionally, the state argued in its brief that bringing this motion to dismiss told the statute. And I would agree that case law does indicate that a motion to dismiss prior to the deadline will toll the 180-day deadline. But again, I think here that's not the case. It was brought 2 days after the deadline and therefore did not toll the deadline. Ultimately, I think the state's arguing that there was a proactive duty on the court to either set a trial, have a trial, or make a finding of or determination of good cause exists. And that statutory requirement just doesn't exist in the statute. I think the plain wording of the statute speaks for itself, that if a trial is not brought and there's no good cause found to extend the deadline, that at the 180 days, the court loses jurisdiction. I think that's what happened here. So we would be respectfully asking this court to affirm the district court order dismissing this case under the UMDDA, as well as the finding that there was nothing that told the that deadline. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? All right. Very good. You may proceed, Mr. Wheeler.
Thank you. At the risk of reading, I intend to do so. Counsel indicates that the statutory duty that's being referenced in the Wilson matter is dicta. It says the district court does not schedule trial if the district court does not schedule trial within 6 months period. We read the UMDDA to impose a clear statutory duty on the district court to determine whether good cause exists to grant additional time beyond that period. Additionally, what is important is, as it relates to the holdings, specifically to Wilson, it has to do with the premature dismissal, and it continues. We also conclude that a writ of mandamus is available to compel the district court to make a determination whether to grant additional time for the complainant to be brought to trial if the court did not schedule trial within the 6 month period and did not exercise its discretion in determining whether additional time should be granted for good cause shown. As it relates to the tolling in my brief,
Wilson, the state asked for a continuance. It was dismissed early, and the state asked for a continuance. And I think, I'm not seeing it right now, Wilson, but it talks about whether, you know, to return it to the district court on a mandamus to ask whether the state has demonstrated good cause. I mean, the state needs to demonstrate good cause. I think that's my concern, or my question is, you seem to think that the district court, no matter what the state's doing, the state is just like absent on the question. The district court has to just sua sponte decide whether there's good cause or not.
I think when you read the clear statutory duty, the court is required to make sure final disposition is within 180 days or have that good cause hearing. That seems to be clearly the requirement of the court. It doesn't say the state. The court has that control.
See whether there's a duty, whether there's good cause shown, I think, by the state who's asking for it.
No, to have the hearing, to even have the hearing. So prior to dismissal, prior to the running of that time, seeing that the final disposition is not going to be held, we don't have any tolling in play if we don't, then the good cause hearing needs to be held. It was sent back in this case, in Wilson, and it continues in the holding saying it can be in all cases where a good cause has not been heard. That's what the state's asking for. If this court does not find either tolling or waiver or both, which would allow the district court to retain jurisdiction if they were incorrect at their decision, then I'm asking for writ of mandamus for that good cause hearing. And at that good cause hearing, all the arguments are saying that the delay as it relates to the defendant's failure to appear is not the defendant's fault, then good cause won't be shown and it's done. But this was not had. And writ of mandamus is an extraordinary remedy, and it's only available because of this clear statutory duty. That's the language in Wilson. Clear statutory duty of the court. Of the court. I don't think that is foregone here because the state wasn't standing on the table pounding, asking for a good cause hearing, especially at that.
Well, they didn't ask for it. They didn't ask for it at all. I mean, what Wilson talks about is that the district court failed by doing what it did. It eliminated the state's ability within the statutory 6 month period to demonstrate good cause for additional time.
And that's,
you know, I don't know whether the Supreme Court really meant to be saying is to the district courts, you are violating the official duties of your job to not prod the state to try to demonstrate good cause.
And again, as the appellant, March 31st would have been the first appropriate date to have that motion for a good cause hearing, either that date or a follow-on date. On that date, there was an omnibus setting outside of time that was agreed to. So there would be no point to ask for extension of good cause or extension as it relates to good cause finding when there's an acquiescence, an agreement to go outside the time. That's not a permanent agreement. After that April 15th date, they could have objected to a further setting outside of time, and then we could have had that hearing. It's not a permanent waiver. It was a temporary waiver. It was a waiver nonetheless, even if it's implicit, if it's unknown, it's the defendant's duty to understand that as well.
Well, could I go to the statute? Because I'm just reading the statute here, 629.292 subdivision 3. It says, I'm going to read too. and I don't if you want to follow along with me, within 6 months after the receipt of the request and certificate by the court and prosecuting attorney, or within such additional time as the court for good cause shown in open court may grant, the prisoner or counsel being present, the indictment or information shall be brought to trial. But the parties may stipulate for a continuance, or a continuance may be granted on notice to the attorney of record, an opportunity for the attorney to be heard. If after such a request, the indictment or information is not brought to trial within that period, no court of the state shall any longer have jurisdiction thereof, nor shall the untried indictment or information be of any further force or effect, and the court shall dismiss it with prejudice. I mean, as I look at that statute, it seems to give the parties the authority to extend this deadline.
It does.
I don't see how it requires that the court, without any notice, with nothing, I mean, with no arguments, with no motion before it, can do this sua sponte.
That would be absent that agreement to extend. 180 days is fast and firm until it isn't. State v. Wells, which looked at New York v. Hill, talked about it not being required to be an explicit or affirmative conduct that counts as a waiver. It's not limited to that. That's in State v. Wells, which was looking at New York v. Hill. I think this case is very unique because 155 days passed due to failures to appear. That doesn't happen in detainers where someone is in custody and can be retrieved by the local jurisdiction. That was prohibited in this matter. I know that's a good cause argument, but the state was never allowed to have that argument because upon that waiver on the 31st to the April 15th date, in between, respondent filed the dismissal.
There was nothing under the statute or the Geese Law that prohibited the state from bringing a motion to extend the timelines for good cause.
Not prohibited, but it would be supplemental. It would be extra. If we have an agreement for a further date, by agreeing to that April 15th date, there was no reason to have that good cause hearing. After that April 15th date, if the next date was would obviously be outside the 180 days absent tolling, if the respondent wasn't agreeable to that, that then would prompt the good cause hearing because we have to have that in order to not lose jurisdiction. Again, April 15th was 183 days. That was agreed to. The court didn't lose jurisdiction because it was agreed to. You can't agree to something outside 180 days and then say, wait, 180 days has expired. Therefore, you've lost jurisdiction. You can't have any kind of hearing.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Very good then. Thank you for your arguments here today. It is a very interesting case. We'll take it under advisement and issue a decision within the statutory period of time.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you.